Thank you for joining us on another adventure in neuromonitoring. Please listen to the end of this cast for our disclaimers.
So I have a bachelor's in biology from the University of Puerto Rico. Now I'm in the UK. This is crazy. This is Puerto Rico on steroids.
You are about to embark on another stimulating adventure in the field of neuromonitoring. This is the IONM for Life podcast with your host, Scott Moore.
IONM for Life. Fan of the podcast, thank you for opening up a space for dialogue and education beyond the technical stuff. I'm searching for mentors. I've been doing IONM for 13 years in Puerto Rico, and I recently moved to the UK. I'm taking a leadership position in a private company. It's a small department, about 4 physiologists and about 5 contractors. They're on their way to growing. I had no expectations, and now that I'm here, I'm just wondering, how do I even start? The plan, big picture, is for me to take over the department. Small feat, I know. So, I thought you could be someone to reach out to. Any advice is welcome. Kindly, Adili Canonis. Adili, you're looking for mentors, and we're going to bring the mentors to you. But first, let's hear your story. Meet Adili.
My name is Adili Quiñones, and I am the new lead IONM physiologist in the UK.
Her story reads like so many of our own stories in neuromonitoring. She went to college in Puerto Rico, she received her bachelor's degree, and she wanted a role in healthcare, but didn't know quite where.
So I have a bachelor's in biology from the University of Puerto Rico. I finished my bachelor's. I thought about going into medicine, but that didn't work out. And I was working, you know, finding something to do with a bachelor's in biology.
And I can relate with her on these next story points. Someone told her about this field in healthcare. Neurophysiology? What's that?
The mom of my best friend reached out to me because there were some people looking for this thing that was completely new in Puerto Rico, an IONM technologist that no one knew what it was. But they were looking for people with a background in science and that were fully bilingual. So I applied and I got into it.
And so her career in intraoperative neuromonitoring started. And she had a good career. She worked first for one US-based company that operated in Puerto Rico. After about 5 years, however, they pulled out. So another company stepped in and funded an expansion in her territory. She signed on with them and was an intraoperative neurophysiologist with them for about 8 years. Adili built her career learning new skills, building relationships with surgeons and spine company reps, and she was a well-established and highly skilled professional. This was about 13 years into her career.
I started mainly in spine. I've been covering pretty much everything. I don't do direct cortical mapping or subcortical mapping or language mapping, but I've done some craniotomies. I was doing endovascular with a neurosurgeon and a lot of ENT cases.
And for the record, her favorite case type?
I love scolies. Scolios. Okay. I do. And I really like tether cords with like pediatric cases.
To listen to Adili describe it, life in neuromonitoring wasn't that much different in Puerto Rico than it is here on the East Coast.
It's pretty much the same as the US. Okay. Crazy hours.
Sure.
crazy cases, a lot of changes, a lot of traveling. Not that much because it's a small island, but there's a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. So it does take us a while to get to places. I think I say is take it on island time. So everything is like slower, takes forever, but it's pretty much the same.
Adili made the most of each challenge that came her way. She grew professionally every chance she could. So one day, when a major opportunity came her way, Adili, experienced, motivated, and courageous, was ready for it. So she took her shot. Okay, so you have 13 years experience in neuromonitoring working in Puerto Rico. Okay, and then all of a sudden, I'm interviewing you right now, and you're in London. So, so obviously, we have some story to fill in here.
In Puerto Rico, I was really kind of stuck. I want to do more. I'm very into like education efforts. I didn't necessarily get the right feedback in Puerto Rico. So I wanted to do something else. So I applied to this job because I thought it wasn't like a possible thing. But I wanted to do the exercise of sending my resume out after 8 years in the same company. You know, I was like,
so you getting took a chance.
Yeah, I was like, getting back into the game, I'm going to aim super high for something that's probably a no-go. So I just sent my resume to the company I'm with now and another company here in the UK. They had two open IONM physiologist positions, and I read the job description, and I'm like, yeah, I can do that. Like, sure, how different can it be? So I was like, I'll just send my resume. And I was just, I'll just send it and probably they won't even call me.
You took a big step of faith and look where you are now. Crossed an ocean. That is amazing. Yeah. Good for you.
Thank you. They're based out in Redditch, which is in the Midlands. Okay. It's right in the middle of the UK. They are providers of neurophysiology services. So they have like clinicians and doctors that do like nerve conduction studies, and they do EEG, like clinical EEG. And then they started in 2014, and what they were doing with IONM was subcontracting. So there's a lot of people in the NHS. So here it works a little bit different than in the US, because most of the people that are in IONM are clinical physiologists, and they go to school for that. And they do, like, they start doing EEGs and nerve conduction studies and sleeps. They're neurodiagnosticians for us. And then they get into IONM, but they do everything. They don't only do IONM. You can work in the NHS, the National Healthcare Service. You can work there. And then you can cover cases for private companies as an extra income. So this company I'm with at was doing that. But then like their cases grew and they ran into the problem that the subcontractors were only doing the cases they wanted to do.
I'm sitting here in New York right now recording this interview. And Adila, you're in London and you are actually having tea while we're talking. Is this correct?
Yes, it is.
That's awesome. So you just arrived about, 2 weeks ago? Did I have that right?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, okay. And you're just building your life here, and you're building, like, you're starting off a new career in neuromonitoring. I have a similar story that is nowhere near as crazy, but I remember leaving Pennsylvania and heading out to Utah. But and just, like, landing the plane and just being basically on my own, responsible for the entire state of, you know, the giant hospital system out there. And just, you know, it was all my responsibility. It was like the neuromonitoring manager for a major company out there. And just how crazy that was, like, kind of building my life, finding a place to live and all that. That is nowhere near on the scale of what you are doing. So I have so much respect for you. I mean, you are brave. You're taking this on. And I know it's got to be scary, and you got to feel lonely. So let's talk a little bit about, like, what are you feeling right now? Like, what's going on in your head and heart?
I'm super tired.
I just want to sleep. There's a 5-hour time difference between New York and London right now, so I don't want to keep you up too late with this interview. So I appreciate you sticking this out.
I'm super enthusiastic. It's kind of weird because I think it hasn't settled down yet, so I kind of feel like I'm on vacation, which is not something my bosses want to hear.
That's it. Hey, this is you're having fun. You're having fun with your new work assignment. That can't be a bad thing.
No, because I get on the train and I'm like, ooh, I'm going to London. Ooh, I've been in like 5 different towns, cities. I don't know why do you call them here. I've been in Wales already, in Cardiff.
Wow.
I was in Nottingham up north. I went to Leeds, which is up north too. I've been to Birmingham, not to work, but I just took a train there and I walk around. Yeah. I've been near Redditch trying, because they want me to be like central. So I've been to a couple towns around Redditch to look for apartments. And then I was at Frimley, which is near London. And I'm taking the train and I'm with my backpack and... the machine. And I don't know, I feel sort of like I'm not working, like, because I get out of the case there, so my case get cancels and I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna just go walk, which is like the worst idea.
Yeah, but I mean, hey, you gotta get acclimated to this new place and you gotta explore it and you gotta enjoy this. You're all, you know, this, you're telling your story right now. You're like living an adventure. Part of it's just going out and seeing the world. I work up in New York. I'm close to Canada. I'm like, I gotta go see the Niagara Falls, right? It's like, you know, it's the same thing. I'm like, I'm here. You might as well make the most of the journey, right?
Yes. I keep putting in the map pins of places I want to go see. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I got here pretty early and it was like a whole bunch of people for the queen and the funeral. So I walked around like Trafalgar Square. I got off the train at another station. So I was like, ooh, I'm near where the whole thing is happening. So I got off the train. I was hauling that Mayo Max up the stairs, but I wanted to see the people, you know? So I walked around a while and then I got to the hotel. Like it was like super late. Yeah. And then I took a shower and I went out again because I was hungry. Mm. So I went out. And then I ate and then I was like checking my phone. I'm like, ooh, I'm near Kensington Palace. I'm just going to go walk there because it's 10 minutes. Yeah, I come from a place that people don't walk. Like I'm not used to walking.
Really?
So 10 minutes is like a long time. I just started walking and then it was like an hour. And I was like, oh, I have to get back to the hotel. And then I couldn't find my way back because I couldn't find the train station. So I was trying to get on a bus and then the bus never came.
Oh, no.
So just standing in the bus station, like, what do I do now? It's like 15 minutes to 8 and I'm 30 minutes from my hotel on foot. Like, I'll just grab an Uber. 12-minute car ride, but a 30-minute walk.
Mm-hmm. Big difference. Big difference. You got to do the safe thing too, right? You got to be safe. So be safe out there. You're in a brand new city. Be safe. I feel like your dad. I'm sorry.
Take care of yourself. I'm learning my limits. Yeah. Take care of yourself.
Get rest. Eat well. Yeah. No. Hey, you are, like I said, you got a lot of responsibility. You got a big challenge. You got to take care of yourself too, right? Submission. Mm-hmm. Drink your tea. Sorry.
Drink my tea.
So what is the food like?
It's super good.
Yeah, it is.
Food is super good. There's a lot of variability. Whatever you can think of, you'll find a restaurant here. It's more than I can say from where I come from, you know? I used to live in a very small part of the world. So my universe was really small. And now it's all this, you know? And just going into an OR and seeing people from all over the world, it's mind-blowing, actually. No, sure. Sorry. Theaters.
Are they operating theaters there?
Open air. Yes. The theaters. And you don't call the doctor a doctor. They're Mr. whatever their name is.
So you wouldn't call them like Dr. Smith or whatever. Be no. Mr. Smith. How about that?
Mr. Smith.
Okay.
Or if they're a professor at the university, then it's Professor Smith.
Then it's professor. Okay.
Yes. Wow. So I'm getting used to that. Yeah, I have to think before I open my mouth. Like, I had changes in my case today, and I went doctor, and then I was like, oh, no. Mister. Yes.
Wow. So currently you are in London while they're having the funeral and just honoring the queen. That's an incredible time in history to show up there. So what is that like?
That's it's crazy. Here in London is another stuff. That's another thing. You know, yesterday was actually a bank holiday, but they call bank holidays a free day because of the funeral. And then on Sunday, I went to a bar in the Midlands. I went to a bar at night. It was like 8 p.m. We did a minute of silence for the Queen. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because we were in a bar, you know, bars are loud. And all of a sudden, it's quiet. And we just looked at each other for a minute.
Wow.
There were people doing that queue, because lines are queues here.
Queues.
For hours. And it's getting cold.
I had read in the news, I think some people had waited 14 hours in line, in queue, to pay their respects. So I was impressed by that fortitude. I want to talk a little bit about mentorship. Okay. So what makes a good mentor in your mind?
Someone that has experience in leadership, I think. And someone that can not hold your hand, but help you figure out stuff when you're stuck in a loop. Someone that can like walk you through stuff that for me right now is like huge. For them, it's like, okay, I've been through that. It's not actually that bad. These are some ideas, or what ideas do you have? So someone that listens, but is able to give their input also.
I asked Adili to name some people she considers to be mentors in our field. One of the people she named was Dr. Faisal Jahangiri. So do you have anyone you consider to be a mentor to you now in neuromonitoring?
Dr. Faisal Jahangiri. Yeah, I finished the diploma he's offering in IUNM.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
good.
It was a lot of work, but it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was super fun.
So why would you say Faisal's a mentor?
Well, he's approachable. He's like super approachable. And he's available. Because with the diploma, he made a little Slack group. And every time I have a weird case, or I encounter some sort of problem, or I'm doing something new, I'll text him through the group, and he's always on. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, that man never tires of working. He, like I said, he's such a producer. He's always doing something.
Yeah, sometimes it's like when I was taking the diploma, sometimes it was like 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I was studying, and I came up with a question, and I was just like, I'm just going to text it now, because otherwise I'm going to forget about it. Mm-hmm. And I will put it on the chat and just forget, like, oh, he'll answer tomorrow. No. 10 minutes later, he's answering the question. And I'm like, come on, dude, you're supposed to be sleeping. So, yeah, he's super knowledgeable. You can ask him about everything, technical-wise. He's like, he knows, he always knows. And if he doesn't know, he'll try to find out.
So I think in healthcare, that the most healthy equilibrium you can have really is the fact that we should all be learning and teaching. We all have experience. And honestly, I believe you can learn from anyone. Mm-hmm. Even if you have a lot of experience, even if you're really good at what you do, you can learn how not to do something sometimes. You can learn from people that don't communicate effectively or don't do something a certain way. Like, hey, I've learned that this is not a pathway to success in dealing with people, in treating people, in interpreting data or making a communication. You can learn from people that are doing things wrong and learn from mistakes as much as you can learn from someone that knows what they're doing, obviously. So, and I think that once you get to a certain stage in your career, and you obviously have a lot of experience, you've seen a lot of case types, and you bring a unique perspective from a different place to mm-hmm. a place where you can help that place by bringing in new ideas, bringing in new approaches, a new viewpoint. You're going to be teaching and you're going to be learning at the same time. That's the healthy equilibrium we all need in healthcare. And it's particularly in neuromonitoring. You have a lot of ideas that you can implement. You can improve what they're doing. You can help them grow. You're approaching this the right way. You're saying, I'm going to come in and learn first. Like, I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn how you do things. I want to learn I want to learn from you. I want to understand what you're doing. And then I'll find a narrow point in the river where I can bridge the gap and say, okay, now here's something that you may want to consider. Here's something you may want to try, right? And, you know, you can just kind of like feed it in naturally without just forcing it on them. Like, hey, I'm bringing all these great big ideas. And because everyone will just stonewall you at that point. Like, nope, sorry, it's too much. And, you know,
yeah.
But that's a good, healthy approach. So I think you're going to be a success there.
Okay, Dilly, you've got this. But as we say on the IONM for Life podcast, we all need to mentor, and we all need mentors. So, we put the call out to some really accomplished people in our field to give you some advice and encouragement. Hello, you've reached Scott at the IONM for Life podcast. I'm either in the operating room or interviewing more amazing people in healthcare to tell their stories. At the tone, please leave your mentorship advice for Adili and everyone else brave enough to step out of their comfort zone and take on a professional challenge.
Hi, Scott. This is Faisal Jangiri, and thank you for reaching out to me for an advice for Adili about mentorship and leadership. I know I'm very excited about Adili that she's moved to a new city, a new country for a leadership role. There are so many things that people will give you advice about. But the main thing is always don't worry about doing everything all together, because it will come to you. And as long as you have a good plan and your focus, the mentorship skills are learned and nurtured over time. It will take some time. But main thing is that you know what you're doing and what you're planning to do. The first thing I'll suggest that get to know your team, because understanding your team is very important. If you're starting a new position and you are a part of a new group and you are in a leadership role, reach out to everyone and set up a time, fixed time dedicated to one person at a time, and talk to them and get their information. Get their background, their strength, their weaknesses, what are their goals, why they're here, what are the short-term goals, what are the long-term goals, how they can help. So you'll have a different people with a different aptitudes and different experiences. And when you combine that, you'll get the most strong team. Another famous quote that many people use is show them and don't tell them. If you are able to do most of your stuff yourself, then it will not be possible for anyone to tell you that it's impossible. So if you can do yourself, learn yourself, and then ask anyone else to do that job for you or the assignment for you, that will be much easier, because they will know that this is possible and you can do that. If they don't do that, somebody else will do that. Always listen to your team and other people around you, because they will give you the best advice. If somebody is giving you an advice, always listen. Ask for constructive advice and ask for recommendation and solution. Because what I have done, whatever project I'm working, I always have different milestones, and I ask for people, students, colleagues, and team members to give me the feedback so I can improve my program, whatever I'm doing. So we should not improve at the end of analyze or get feedback at the end, because that project is already done or work is already done. So it should be a continuous work in progress. So different people have different ways of doing things, and you will be working in different people. So just make sure you're flexible and you are very comfortable going out of your comfort zone, because if you are very strict and you are not that flexible, you may get into more resistance. Try to work with other people, be flexible, and try to accommodate people with different needs and different work experiences. Also, try to be responsible. So having I know you're already responsible, so I'm just saying that that's part of the leadership role. As you have to be very responsible and take control of everything. So just have a deadlines and then meet them and make sure you are communicating with that. Communication is one of the most important things in the leadership. Over-communication is never bad. So always communicate, and make sure everyone understands and know what is supposed to be done. Managing and training other people comes with learning. So keep learning new things, because one of the advice given to me by my first professor in medical school when I started teaching was, he told me that if a student come to you and you don't know the answer, don't give the wrong answer and don't brush up. Go and find the answer and tell them, okay, I'll come back tomorrow and give you the answer. So, and that helped me so much. And the reason is I learned a lot because I don't know everything and I keep learning. So I have so many things to learn. So when somebody asks me a question, that's one part I love about education and training is people ask me a question and I said, okay, I'm going to find out the answer and then go and go back in. So when I read more and I learn about a new thing or something which I'm not correct, and I go and make sure double check that is that a correct way to do that or there's a better way. There's always ongoing research, new techniques. So, and I learn new things and then I go back and teach the other people. So when you learn, so learning new ideas, new knowledge, and then teaching is the best way to keep moving forward and then helping your team members. So and also lead by example. So be the best example for whatever you have assignment for your team. Few other things are the goals. So you should have set up goals for each team member. And those goals can be either personal goals and company goal or group goal. So the shared goals are very important. The personal goals are also important for the person, your team members, what they want in the short term and long term and where they want to be. But shared goals are also very key because you want to have a shared goal where you can participate and also lead them and guide them. And that short goals can help your group or company or hospital, wherever you're working, to move more forward. So last thing I'll say, the responsibilities are very important. So what I've done myself was giving responsibility to team members. So good leader is not the one who is doing everything himself or herself. So you should be able to do those things and you should be able to show them how to do that. But delegation is very important. When you delegate different responsibility to different team members, for example, giving schedule to one person, scheduling is one person, supplying basic electrodes or advanced electrode to different people, communication, keeping an eye on the surgery, education part, follow-up. If you have different people, many people, when you have assigned responsibility to, they feel part of the team and they will be more proud of working in that environment and it will have less stress on you and then you can go back and give them some guidance. But giving the responsibility is very important. So those are the few things, my 2 cents. And I'm very happy that you are starting this position and just wish you good luck.
Hi, Scott. It's Rich Vogel. Thanks so much for inviting me to share a few thoughts about leadership and mentoring. And Adley, it was great to hear your story on the podcast. Congratulations on your move to the UK. So one of my favorite leadership slash mentoring quotes is by Jack Welch. He was the former CEO of General Electric. He said, before you become a leader, success is all about growing yourself. And when you become a leader, success is all about growing others. I love this quote because there's so many embedded truths. And I think it starts with growing yourself, which is so important. Edley mentioned she looked for a mentor with experience. And part of being a mentor is having that relevant expertise to share. Gathering that expertise obviously takes commitment to years of discipline, study, and practice. It also takes surrounding yourself with the right mentors. And I think this is something that I'll come back to. How do you find a mentor? But growing yourself isn't just about soaking up relevant knowledge and experience and expertise. It's also about growing as a person. So one thing few people know about me is that for the past 4 or 5 years, I've started every single day by reading the works of Stoic philosophers like Seneca, Marcus Aurelius, and Epictetus. In their time, these folks were leaders, warriors, teachers, mentors, who focused on living a virtuous life and finding the resolve to persist in the face of adversity. I try to ask myself every day, how can I encourage, support, and promote the people around me? And importantly, how can I do this through kindness, patience, and empathy? If you think about it, the opposite of that is the person who pushes you from point A to point B through callousness, impatience, selfishness, to make themselves look good. And it's only when you've reached this level of success in a lifelong journey of self-growth that you're really in a position to be a leader or mentor, because your focus now includes growing others. And that's how you define success. That really speaks, I think, to the second part of Jack Welch's quote of focusing on growing others. I can tell you that a good mentor can never be motivated to teach and lead. They need to be inspired, because motivation comes from an external force, like money or recognition. Inspiration comes from within. It's that inner drive, a personal investment to grow and develop others. My advice to anyone who's out there who's seeking a mentor is to look for someone who is inspired to grow and develop others. Now, that's easier said than done, right? Because you're like, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, I can tell you what to look for probably by identifying some red flags to avoid. And the first one is narcissism. People who constantly talk about themselves and promote themselves generally don't genuinely care about other people. You should look for somebody who is humble. Greed is another one. People who will only consider mentoring if they get paid or recognized for the effort, they won't invest in you. And we all know that there are neuromonitoring companies out there that they have these mentor programs, right? And they're like, well, if you're a mentor, I'll pay you $5,000 extra a year. And you're like, cool, I'll be a mentor. But they're only doing it for the money. So you want somebody who doesn't have that motivation, but they're inspired. Because that form of motivation, that it's directly tied to the level of pay or recognition that the mentor anticipates. So you should look for somebody who is generous with their knowledge and their experience. And I think the last thing, the last red flag to look for is selfishness. So people who always want to know what they get out of the deal. Think about everything transactionally as opposed to relationally. They'll fail you as a mentor in the end. So you need to look for somebody who's altruistic. From a practical perspective, it's good for a mentor and mentee to establish bi-directional expectations early in the relationship. So identify, what do you each expect of one another? And you should do that formally, because it sets the stage for holding each other accountable. A mentor ultimately must give honest, direct, and constructive feedback, but again, through kindness, patience, and empathy. A good mentor listens to understand and guides the growth of mentees by encouraging, supporting, and promoting them. This is how knowledge and experience and expertise are transferred from one person to another. And this is how it's done effectively. Finally, at some point in the relationship, the mentee will begin to spread their wings and fly. And I truly believe that a good mentor knows when to get out of the way, to remain available, but to stand back and enjoy the success of the mentee as he, she, they become mentors themselves. And I guess one final point to consider, a mentor doesn't need to be the best in the world of whatever it is you want to learn. And in this case, it's probably neuromonitoring. They just need to support and develop you into being the best that you can be. That last point is from my fiance, Beth Wells, someone who inspires me to be the best version of myself every day. So I guess that's all I have to say. Thanks very much to Scott and Italy, and kudos to all the great mentors out there. Cheers.
Hi, my name is Shakira Tassone. I am a senior surgical neurophysiologist and market development coordinator. I think, like what Scott said, what you're doing is very admirable and inspirational as a great way to not only get out of your comfort zone, but to experience the world in a very different way. Being a mentor to me is having a brain to pick, an ear to listen, and a push in the right direction when you need one. If you're able to do those things for somebody, it makes a humongous impact on them and how they perceive you. Like you said, being available and approachable is a huge part of being a mentor, and knowing the right information to help guide somebody and being able to explain it to them in a way that they understand, I think is the best skill that you could have. Be patient, be non-judgmental, and don't be afraid to give constructive feedback, because that's what helps people grow. You'll do a fantastic job.
Hey, it's Joe Hartman. I got your message. Congrats on becoming a manager. That's awesome. So I was thinking about your question about what to do as a new manager, and I think the best advice I could give you is just to give a general game plan for the first 90 days. Those first 90 days are critical, and the stakes are never going to be higher for you as a new manager. I mean, you really got to nail this in this time period. And what you're looking to really focus on is three big things: communication, consistency, and conquering a common enemy. And we'll get into all three of those things in a moment. But first, we have to understand why we're targeting communication, consistency, and a common enemy. It's because that's the job to be done. That's what everybody's watching you, seeing if you can answer the question going on inside their head: can I trust them? That's it. They aren't worried if you guys are going to be buds or if you're going to mentor them or whatever. There's been a change in the environment and they're on alert. You've been brought into the pack and haven't done anything yet to deserve it. There's no history there. There's no past experience to better predict future occurrences. So caution is the default mode. What you're lacking is their trust, which is hard to earn, hard to build upon, and easy to drain. But it's exactly the thing you need. Because at some point, yeah, not right away, but at some point, you're going to need to take control and ask them to do things different or go a new direction or do more. It's an inevitability. So they really need to trust you that you're the right person to do it, to give them the right direction, give them what they need to be successful, and to be fair in the process. At the same time, it's a game being played. We're all players in it. And in the short run, it's the game that's being played is what defines what the players will do. Now, that might make us sound a little inadequate, like we're just cogs in a system or something, but it's true, and we're all a product of our environment. Because in the long run, on repeated games, it flips. It ends up being the people that define the game that's being played. So if you have a local culture of fairness, coordination, and trust, you'll go pretty far. If the players act solely in their own self-interest, miscommunication is high, and interactions are limited, you fast forward to a state of destruction. So it's trust that you're after. Earn trust. And how do you first establish this and continue to build trust? Well, there's three main ways to go about this. First, the repeated games of trust consist of frequent interactions, which makes sense, right? You have to be present. Be consistently present. You know, the they're always there for me kind of present. That's what resists the first enemy of trust, which is distance. Physical distance and time elapsed is like salt on a snail. It withers it away. The second enemy trust is bad character. And that fits with the next two ways of building trust: creating at least a possibility of a win-win and low miscommunication. So fairness, as established by the norms, or what's acceptable or better. And low miscommunication, with the goal of communicating so well that it's not just communicated, but it's understood. So that's what you need to do and why. But what about how? Well, there's, you know, an infinite amount of tactics to apply. I'll give you a couple examples out of the playbook for your consideration to run through them or not. So we want to start off with a bang, so we need to really focus on communication, be it the one-on-ones or group discussions, but we need to meet with our team and lay the foundation of good communication. And remember, we want to strive to be consistent, so we'll set up a cadence of communication over the 90 days with our teams and individuals and make adjustments as appropriate. At the bare minimum, I'm suggesting a weekly one-on-one call or in-person meeting that lasts 30 minutes with more time at a later date if necessary. And on the first one-on-one, it's really an introduction. But you also need to act as an investigator, because you're up against the clock in this first 90 days. So be your genuine self and have the introductions. This first meeting might be more loose than the typical guidance of a third of the time for them, a third for you, and a third for planning for next time. But you'll need to at least take some time to ask questions and give answers. It's what's talked about here that will determine if your first 90 days creates momentum or just limps along. So here's some example questions. These are intended to get honest comments, as well as start some buy-in from each person by having a voice. We all want to be part of something bigger than ourselves, and this is a great first step to inviting them along. So, what can we ask? We'll ask things like, what's working that you don't want me to screw up? What's the pebble in the shoe? You know, the quick fix that is a nagging pain, but it's easy enough to shake out of the shoe. What's the big thing that needs to be called out? It's usually the hardest thing to fix, but worth working on. So you've got three questions there. Then you say something like, great, thank you for that direction. That's helpful for me and my job. And while I can't promise I have a magic wand to make it all happen, I do have some targets to shoot at. So let me ask you a couple things about you. Then you might open up some questions like, what's the thing you most like about your job? What's the thing you like least? What's the accomplishment in your work life that you're most proud of? So now you have some buy-in by inviting them along to creating solutions, and you've established an interest in their progress. This isn't for show. This is going to be in your notes and come up on your next one-on-one, but let's get back to where we currently are. Next, you're going to say something like, thank you for sharing that about you. Can I tell you about a goal of mine? It's kind of a big one and a little bit different. With all the people we interact with in the company, I'd like to do what I can to make our time together rewarding. One way I'm going to measure this is if we look around and we don't see employees of a company, but fans first. That might mean we gladly wear the company shirt, tell other A players to come join our organization, we're invested in each other's life, and so on. Now that's an admirable goal. It might not be yours though, so substitute whatever you want to right there, whatever is important to you. Show some vulnerability by being transparent on what you're hoping to achieve and allow them to see how they fit into it. Okay, so now you've had your one-on-ones and you've taken notes. You've learned what's treasured, what's problematic, what the current culture looks like, people's past accomplishments and future aspirations. Without pointing a finger at it but demonstrating it, you're working on trust by effectively communicating, establishing consistency, and identifying a common enemy. The relationship has started and the investigation concluded. Now you need to act. You need to pick a crisis and you need to do this early. I cannot emphasize this enough. Getting a win early does so much in setting the tone for a new leader. It shows you're willing to listen and roll up your sleeves and get it done. This early win is coming from your list. That question about the pebble in the shoe, it's something that you know you can accomplish. They see you're looking out for their best interest. It also gives you a chance to communicate back to your team in a consistent manner. What you're doing here is where you want to show your work, your progress, and your promise held. Call people out that are helping out. You want to establish recognition as a part of the process. Remember, you invited them on this journey, on this game being played. With the right incentives in place, the players will start to dictate how these games are played going forward. What you're doing is creating momentum to move this team forward. You're establishing yourself as someone worth trusting. Your next couple of weeks is knocking pebbles out of the shoe, celebrating with your team, and talking more on their one-on-ones about what they'd like to accomplish and how you can help facilitate it. In the background, you're also working to slay the final boss. This is the common enemy most agree upon. It's an unresolved crisis. That's a big one, and this one will probably take time. But if you can get this done in your first 90 days, you're going to earn your stripes and accelerate your rate of trust. You're proving yourself a worthy part of the tribe, which is a trust-dependent position. Now, there's a lot there, and each of these steps is a huge section that we can go further into. You know, there's tactics to build out trust, how to manage a crisis, what game theories are being modeled, and what's the winning strategies. All of those are part of the curriculum we search out to learn when we want to know how to lead people effectively. But let's start where we are now, on week one, and eat this elephant one bite at a time.
Hello, Italy. This is Craig Crookston. I'm the director of the Kaleida Health in-house service line for NeuroAlert up here in Buffalo, New York. I'm grateful to be able to share my thoughts with you on mentorship because it's something that's really helped me out over the years in my personal career. The first thing that I learned is to not be afraid to reach out to leaders in the field. An example of this is when I was interested in bringing cardiac monitoring to the children's hospital I was at in Utah. I reached out to Harvey Edmonds from the University of Louisville, who did the foundation research on cardiac monitoring in pediatric cases. He was exceptionally helpful in everything from technical questions to billing, just an absolute wealth of information. I didn't think a person with his credentials would be willing to help, you know, a person just starting out in the field like me, but he was absolutely helpful and so just kind, and to be able to share his passion with me of monitoring these cardiac cases. Another example, when I needed to learn how to do D-waves, I read some material that Rich Vogel had written. So I reached out to him, and he was absolutely wonderful on the subject. And not only did he take time to answer all of my questions, he sent me his stim parameters, he sent me helpful hints on monitoring D-waves, he sent 10 attachments consisting of book chapters, research articles, just on D-waves, and then he sent an additional 9 more on dorsal column mapping. And to top it off, he even sent me his link to his favorite electrode. So I was super happy with all that, and I was able to start to do D-waves after that. And so, Rich, I still owe you dinner for that one. Next time we're at the ASNM, I'll try to look you up. The second piece of advice I have for you is actually a little counterintuitive, but it's to hire a mentor. And again, when I was at this children's hospital, we were just setting up things like policies and procedures, redoing all of those, and setting up all the nuts and bolts to really take the program up to a different level. And I reached out to Jeff Balzer, and he was instrumental in helping us to have a policies and procedures book at the University of Pittsburgh. I think theirs is like 2 inches thick or something like that. But he was able to share the things that we needed to help us to bring our program up to the next level, which I really appreciated. And we just paid him an hourly rate. And because of that, we were able to do a lot with his information. The third piece of advice I have for you is to join a committee. Early on in my career, I joined the ASNM Special Interest Group on Research. And I was able to meet some just amazing people in our field that way. Some have been great resources over the years with questions or helping me out, facilitating conferences, or even navigating the politics of ASNM. On the committee, we had people like Lawrence Wurzbowski, Jay Shillis, Matt Ecker, Bernie Cohen, and it just really provided a foundation of people I could reach out to in a pinch if I needed something, not only about information, but other things that I talked about as well. So those are my pieces of advice for you. I think you're in a great place career-wise. I think you're in a great place with what you've learned with Faisal. Reach out to those people who are experts in the things that you want to learn, and the sky's the limit. So thanks and have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IONM for Life podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please remember to like, subscribe, and tell a friend. Join us next time for more stimulating adventures.
This podcast is not affiliated with any medical device or neuromonitoring company. At the present time, the IONM for Life podcast does not accept any advertising money. All opinions expressed on the IONM for Life podcast do not necessarily represent the views and opinions held by myself or anyone associated with the IONM for Life podcast. This podcast should not be used in any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing standard of care in a legal sense or as a basis for expert witness testimony. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on the podcast. I welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors.